This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. Go to the beer case in your local grocery store, and chances are you can find the Bud, the Michelob, even the Heineken, maybe even Guinness. But if the beer you want has an alcohol content over 6%, you won't find it for sale anywhere in North Carolina. Because of the state's current cap at 6%, many micro-brewed specialty beers and foreign beers cannot be bought here. But this may be changing. The State House this session has okayed a bill that would pop the cap and allow beer with 15% alcohol level to be sold in North Carolina. So, is this a good thing, opening North Carolina to more varieties of beer? Or will it, as opponents say, mean some drinkers will get drunk faster? We welcome your calls this hour. The number's 1-877-962-9862. We're talking not only about the beer alcohol cap in North Carolina, but about North Carolina's liquor laws in general. Alcohol may be legal in the state, but some decisions about its sale are still left to local discretion. Joining us now is Julie Bradford. She is editor of All About Beer magazine. It's a national magazine based in Durham, and she is director of the current Pop the Cap campaign. Welcome, Julie Bradford. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks very much, Melinda. Nice to be here again.
Well, what is the origin of the current law, the 6% cap we have in North Carolina?
It dates back to the end of Prohibition in the 1930s, when the states could one by one re-legalize beer. Most states did so without any reference to any upper limit on the alcohol content of beer. However, a handful of states wrote into their laws a maximum alcohol content that was permitted. North Carolina's content initially was 5%. It's now 6%, and there are only six states in the country with that low a limit on alcohol content. Another 44 do not have it.
So you have been making the case this year in the legislature and in previous years when the effort to, as you say, pop the cap has not succeeded, has not gotten very far. What is your case for raising the cap?
Well, a 6% cap was not an inconvenience maybe a couple decades ago, but in the past 20 years, and particularly in the past 10 years, we've seen a flowering in the availability of beer styles. When people think of beer, they tend to think of the yellow fizzy stuff, which is refreshing, relatively low alcohol, a hot weather drink. But there are, in fact, 60 or 70 other distinct beer styles in the world. And about a third of them, the classic beer styles, as part of their character, finish up at alcohol strengths higher than 6%. So that means that about a third of the world's classic styles can't be made or sold or enjoyed here in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. And so the case is then that 15% would allow most of those to be sold here.
Yeah, it would allow all the classic styles. I mean, there are some experimental beers that go up to 18% and beyond, but those are fascinating beers, but they're terribly expensive, and there's a very small number.
How expensive are they?
Oh, jiminy. As much as $100 a bottle, and they come in a dovetail jointed wooden case and so on. So these are very exclusive beers. It'd be nice to be able to get those, but 15% really includes all the classic styles.
That's a reverse on the old champagne taste in beer pockets.
Yes, it is.
So with these 15% alcohol content beers, how much would they be selling for?
I think we have to look much more at the beers that are likely to be sold here. 15 is the maximum, and someone's done a list of the world's strongest beers. And there are only a handful that are even close to 15. So it's more realistic to talk about the beers that people are really clamoring for. Most of those are wonderful table beers that are around, say, 8 or 9%. Some of these are sold in corked wine size bottles. And those will sell for maybe $10 for a bottle. A lot of the really exclusive imported beers sell for maybe $10, $12 a six-pack. So these are fairly expensive because the ingredients are expensive, and the aging of these beers also costs the brewery time. They're also very much an acquired taste, so these will always be a niche within a niche. But for those people who've acquired the taste, they would really like to have this choice when they go out to purchase beer.
Now, if the state Senate goes along with what the House has done and the cap is raised, where would these beers be sold? Would they still be sold in grocery stores, or would you go to an ABC store because they have a higher alcohol content?
No, they'll be sold in the same outlets that sell beer and wine right now. So they will be, some of them will be approaching the strength of a lot of wines. But those are sold on grocery store shelves now. They'll be available through the same outlets. Because these are expensive and, as I say, a niche within a niche, you're likely to find them only in specialty outlets. I mean, right now, if you go to a standard grocery store, as you said at the beginning, you find mainstream lagers take up 95% of the space, and then maybe one pale ale, one stout, and one Hefeweizen. I suspect that the stores that choose to carry this fairly rarefied range are going to be the specialty beer stores, the same place where people go for, you know, to buy a $4 latte or to spend, you know, $5-6 a pound on organic grapes. Mm.
There are those who have been critical of this and who've said, don't raise that limit because people will get drunk faster. That I think there are images of a beer that people go to drink right now that has the highest possible alcohol content, not much in the way of taste. And they would do it, they would go for something that's 15%, going for it not for the taste, but shall we say for the medicinal effect or less than medicinal. So what would you say to that? Because there are those critics there.
That's been the most important group for us to reach out to, are the people who simply don't understand the nature of these beers and who quite rightly fear that these might be Budweiser on steroids. Mm. And if you give them the opportunity to taste them, they realize that, first of all, these are profoundly different flavors. You would no more drink a pint of one of these beers than you would drink a pint of fine port. They're just not things that you enjoy in that kind of quantity. Secondly, they are, as I said, quite expensive. So if, unfortunately, people are, as I term it, shopping for alcohol rather than flavor, these are not a smart economic decision to make. They are a very costly way to buy alcohol, even though they contain more beer than more alcohol than mainstream beer. We already have on our shelves things like fortified wines, which are a very cheap source of high alcohol and would be, I guess, the choice of people who are looking to abuse alcohol. These are the choices of people who are looking to maximize flavor.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones. Liz is with us from Fuquay Varina. Hi there, Liz. Hello, Liz?
Yes.
Hi. Welcome to the program. Did you have a question for our guest?
Yes. I'm concerned about the location of sales. I'm listening and I hear that she feels like there's an opportunity to limit the sales because of the content and the quality of the taste, but I'm still concerned that underage drinkers will hear that there's higher content alcohol and be able to buy it in grocery stores. I think sales should be limited to specialty stores.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Julie Bradford?
Well, again, I simply don't think they're going to be available in convenience stores. In fact, Pop the Cap, the organization that's been promoting a change in the law, initially looked to the state retailers and convenience store associations to see how they felt about this. And their response was, we're not going to carry this stuff. There's no market in our audience for these beers. And they chose not to take any stand on the law change because they have no intention of carrying this. It's just not their market. So you'd be looking at the specialty gourmet stores already.
Mm-hmm. We go to Bob in Raleigh. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how are you doing this morning?
Good afternoon to you.
I don't think it's going to create any additional problems. I'd like to see some additional competition in the market, in the beer market. There are already a lot of, somebody already mentioned, fortified wines that have higher alcoholic content than some of our current beers. And you can go to the ABC store and buy a wide range of alcoholic products that are much higher than the current beers.
But I guess, what about the case, though, that some folks make that, you know, there's a finite number of ABC stores, or there are fewer ABC stores in every county than there are, you know, the corner grocery store, the convenience store that where you could go and get, you could presumably go get this. I mean, the market may not dictate it, but you still could.
It's like illegal drugs. Everybody would say they're hard to get, but from what I've heard, they're prevalent and it's not too hard to buy. So I think to make that ABC store argument, it just doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know you're going to be having people on a little later who know the North Carolina, the overall alcohol law landscape. As I understand it, the distinction between what's sold in ABC stores and what's sold elsewhere is whether it's a distilled alcohol or not. I know there are a few exceptions. There are some non-distilled products in the ABCs, but that's the outlet for distilled alcohol. And there's always been a clear distinction that fermented alcohol, and that's wine and beer, would be available through different outlets.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're talking with Julie Bradford. She is editor of All About Beer magazine, a national magazine based in Durham, and also was leading the Pop the Cap campaign in the state legislature this year. It appears that effort to raise the alcohol limit for beer sales in North Carolina is succeeding more than it has in any other year. It has passed the state house so far in this session. If you want to join the conversation, the number is 1-877-962-9862. In just a moment, we will be talking with a former chair of the North Carolina ABC Commission, and that's coming up on the state of things. But right now, let's go to James, who's in Greenville. Hi there, James.
Hi, I'm from Greenville.
Yes.
And I'm just graduated from college, I guess, and I've been drinking craft brew for a while now, and you normally have to go out of state to get it because of the alcohol law, and most craft brews seem to be above 6%, around 9%. Mm-hmm. And my experience with that's been that people my age with, you know, in college or whatever, don't really like the kind of beer that I like. So I don't really think it's as big a problem for people, you know, just buying it to get drunk.
Okay. Well, James, thank you for your call. And if this passes, I guess you wouldn't have to go out of state to buy that then. Thank you for your call. This is the State of Things. We are talking today about the campaign to raise the alcohol content of beer in North Carolina. And we are talking about North Carolina's alcohol laws in general. We'll get back to our conversation in just a moment. If you want to join the conversation, numbers 1-877-962-9862. We'll get to your calls and talk also with a toxicologist at ECU about his studies on alcoholic rats. This is the State of Things. I'm Melinda Penkava, and we're today talking about the collage of laws that regulate and control the sale of alcohol in North Carolina. We're talking about this because a bill in the state legislature could raise the amount of alcohol allowed in beer. Currently, that limit is 6%. The measure in the state house, which has passed there and goes on to the state senate, would allow beer as with an alcohol content as high as 15% to be sold in the state. But there are, of course, other alcohol laws in North Carolina, and we're getting to those right now. With us in the studio is Julie Bradford. She is editor of All About Beer magazine and director of Pop the Cap, which had been lobbying the state government to raise the cap on beer. We're also talking now with Ann Fulton, who is former chair of the North Carolina Alcohol Beverage Control Commission, otherwise known to many of us as the ABC. Welcome to the State of Things, Ann Fulton.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi. Well, you served for years, for decades on the ABC and were chair of the ABC for the past 4 or 5 years. How many of North Carolina's liquor laws are on the books as a direct reaction to the end of Prohibition in the 1930s?
Well, there's hundreds of pages of statutes. And in addition, the commission has the authority to adopt rules or regulations to supplement the general statutes that are enacted by the legislature. So there's pages and pages.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was the purpose of the ABC when it was established right after Prohibition? Was it expected to be around for 70-plus years?
Oh, I think so. The commission was established to provide for uniform regulation and enforcement of the laws throughout the state, and to make the laws consistent, or to make the regulation consistent, so that each county had the same basic set of laws with regard to sale, hours of sale, days of sale, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. But of course, it's not the same county to county, because there are wet counties, there are dry counties, counties where you can't buy alcohol.
That's true.
Now, why was that worked into the law?
Well, it was felt after Prohibition that there should be what we call, or what we refer to as, local option, where the individual communities can vote the way they want beer, wine, or spirits to be sold. And that has been the pattern in North Carolina until recent years, when there have been a few statewide laws that have been enacted to permit mixed beverage sales by certain types of establishments on a statewide basis, irregardless of the vote.
So is the presumption that a county is a dry county, or is the presumption that all counties allow sales of liquor and then the county has to take steps to not allow sales of liquor?
Well, in reality, there are only four counties that are totally dry. Otherwise, the remaining 96 counties have at least one town that has permitted usually an ABC store system, a local ABC system, or has permitted beer sales, for example, in one town within a county. So there are only four, I believe, possibly three now, that are totally dry with regards to malt beverages, wine, and spirituous liquor.
And which counties are those?
I know that Graham and Clay mm-hmm. are dry.
In the far western part of the state.
Right. And I don't remember the other two. Mm-hmm. I believe Yancey may be one of them. But as I said, there is the possibility that there might be a sports club, which would be like a golf and country club, located within a totally dry county that is permitted to sell mixed beverages, beer and wine, for on-premise consumption.
Mm-hmm. Well, this gets us to one other facet of the law that I think it's not all states have this set up, and that is that when you can sell mixed drinks in, say, a bar, in North Carolina, it can't just be strictly a bar that sells them, as I understand it. They have to show that they're offering food for sale. Is that right?
Well, there are some establishments that do not offer food, but they're considered private clubs, mm-hmm. so that theoretically they are not open to the general public. They're limited to members and their guests, and there's no food requirement at those establishments.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, hotels and restaurants do have to sell food.
Do pretzels qualify as food? Peanuts
no.
on the table? Or
No. Pretzels do not qualify the place for permits.
Right. But on that aspect of, I have heard stories over the years, though, about the idea of private membership in a club that, you know, if you walked up and wanted to walk into that establishment, you know, you could pay your $1 and get your instant membership and walk on in.
Well, if that was the case, technically that would be a violation of the statutes mm-hmm. that were enacted to regulate those types of businesses.
Right. Now, North Carolina, for the longest time, did not allow liquor by the drink. And if I'm reading correctly, it was only in the late 70s that it was...
1978.
And what happened before that?
I believe it was the 1960s, a law was passed that would permit patrons of businesses to brown bag so that they would go to the local ABC store, purchase their bottle of liquor, and then carry that bottle to their private club or to the restaurant or hotel where they were having a function. And, of course, it was referred to as brown bagging because most people carried the bottles in brown bags.
Mm-hmm. For some discretion. Right.
Yeah.
We are talking with Ann Fulton, who is former chair of the North Carolina ABC Commission. And with us as well is Julie Bradford, who is editor of All About Beer magazine. If you want to join the conversation, our number is 1-877-962-9862. Sparking this discussion on the liquor laws in North Carolina is the effort in the state legislature to raise the cap. Currently, it is at 6% alcohol level in beer. And Julie Bradford is heading a campaign called Pop the Cap, which would push that up to 15% is what the proposal is written right now, Julie. Right?
That's right, yes.
Okay. Let's go to the phones. Jeff is in Cary. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine, welcome to the program. Did you have a question?
I did. I wanted to know whether there's anything written into this law that would prevent a major brewery like Budweiser or Anheuser-Busch from just increasing the alcohol content of their product.
No, there's nothing targeted specifically at one sort of brewery or another. I think what you find, though, is that since Budweiser is the biggest brewing company on earth, you look at what they do in the other 44 states, and in fact, they have not. They haven't become the biggest brewery by making silly economic decisions, and they know what they do well. So the big guys, the big brewers, Anheuser-Busch, Miller, Coors. They specialize in fairly low alcohol content inexpensive, refreshing beer. Occasionally, they step out of that mold. Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch test marketed a beer at 6.5%. This is something called B to the E. And when it was eventually released on the market, it was 4.5% nationwide, because they know, you know, that that's a very distinct market, and they know how to handle that market.
Mm-hmm. Is there, but I guess getting to the question is there nothing, would it make sense monetarily for the big breweries to get in on this game? I mean, I don't know much about brewing beer. You know, it's not as though you just add alcohol,
no.
Is it? But could it be could they go through a process that made the alcohol content much higher, pitch that in advertising to the public that, you know, you can basically get a faster buzz off of this beer and still make money at it? And undersell the specialty beer guys that you're supporting here.
I think you've sort of covered the bases there. There's nothing to stop the big guys from making a stronger, a specialty beer of this sort, but they're not doing it. And the reason is that they would be stepping out of the price point where their market lies. They would be going head to head with, beers made by monks in Belgian monasteries that are treasured by beer lovers here. I mean, if they can make something with the deep flavor and sophistication that beer lovers want to pay money for, then they have to compete with, you know, the Belgian monastic beers, the English old ales that are designed to be laid down in a cellar for several years to age. Mm. That's not their market. That's not what they do well. What they do well is mass-produced, mass-marketed beer, and they know how. They're not going to step out of that market.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to Anne, who's in Johnston County. Hi there, Anne.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to the program. Did you have a question?
Yes, I did. I called to find out your last couple of statements sort of led into my segue into my question. I wanted to know if your guest, who was at promoting the 15%, I mean the cap, being popped.
Yeah.
If she was familiar with a beer called Desperado. It's manufactured in Mexico, but Heineken has something to do with it. I sampled the beer in France, and Heineken's was the company that had exported it.
Yes, I think it is now a French brand. There was an American beer with the name Desperado, and that brand name was purchased by a French brewery. I'm not familiar with the beer itself, though.
Did you like it, Anne?
It's delicious. It's beer with tequila in it.
Ooh.
Now, is that the normal route to get the alcohol content raised, is to add hard liquor to it?
No, that's a different avenue. There's a group of beverages known as malternatives, where some of the alcohol actually comes from flavored spirits that are added. So it's beer-based, but then they bring it up to its serving strength by adding something like a distilled beverage. But there are some pretty careful legal controls on how much you can add.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you for your call, Anne. 1-877-962-9862 is our number. We are talking about liquor laws in North Carolina. With us are Anne Fulton, who is former chair of the North Carolina ABC Commission, and Julie Bradford, who is editor of All About Beer magazine. And with us now is Brian McMillan. He's a professor of pharmacology and toxicology at the Brody School of Medicine at East Carolina University. There, he is researching the effects of alcohol on rats, and also looking into the drinking habits of ECU students in an effort to reduce the impact of alcohol on students' lives. Welcome, Brian McMillan.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for joining us. Well, you are the faculty co-chair of Impact ECU, a task force designed to reduce the impact of alcohol and drugs on college students. And I imagine during your work, you've seen a lot of what does and doesn't work. And in regard to policies on alcohol in the state, what do you think works, first of all?
Probably the single biggest impact you can have is by affecting price. The college students tend to buy large quantities of inexpensive beer. If you raise the price, they end up buying less. That's the simplest, most direct thing you can do.
Mm. What policy in particular do you think doesn't work?
Well, I can tell you that the 21 drinking age has had the reverse effect. in that surveys of our students back when that was phased in from 86 to 89, we saw a dramatic increase in the amount of alcohol being consumed.
Since then, now that the age is at now that the legal drinking age is 21,
it's been holding fairly steady. And we've done surveys in a variety of different ways: internet, mail back, handout in classroom. Numbers come out fairly consistently. We have 20 to 23% who don't drink. We have about 55% who are what I call risky drinkers. Five or more drinks in one setting in the 2 weeks prior to survey. Mm-hmm. And those numbers have been fairly constant over the last 10 years.
Right. What was it like before when the drinking age was 18, legal drinking age?
Survey from 1986, about 90% were current drinkers and 40% were risky drinkers.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying the numbers have gone up in the terms of the risky drinkers?
Well, what we found was 1989, after the law had been phased in, current drinkers were 80%, risky drinkers were 52.5%, and the amount of drinks consumed per setting had increased 50%.
Now, can you pin that on the law raising the age, or might there be other factors in society that...
You look at, you know, what went on between 86 and 89. The survey that was done was conducted by Jerry Lauterhouse, who just recently retired from ECU, because they knew the law was coming into effect, it was being foisted on the states by Congress, asked, you know, whether or not you're going to stop drinking, or, you know, had questions about where you're drinking now and where you plan to drink if the drinking age goes to 21. And about 10% said they'd stop drinking, and the others said they would change where they're drinking. So they left the clubs and the restaurants, and were drinking in the residence halls and the apartments.
Mm-hmm. And does that get to your price point factor, where it's cheaper if you buy the six pack and drink at home than if you're paying per drink at the bar?
Yeah, Jerry was asking a question. I don't know why this drinking went up so much. I said, well, think about it. Cover charge and two drinks at the club buys you a 12 pack. So now you have substituted social level of drinking in a controlled environment for a risky drinking episode in an uncontrolled environment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to bring Ann Fulton back in. Ann, you're former chair of the North Carolina ABC Commission. Were those the kinds of, I realize raising the drinking age to 21 was more or less mandated by the federal government. States had to go along to get the federal highway dollars.
Right.
But was that the kind of, would you look at that kind of information when making decisions? Or at the
well,
state
the
level?
Commission, the commission's role was to administer the law, so we weren't involved in, you know, making a decision to change the law. The commission wasn't. That was the General Assembly, and the research is very interesting. We didn't do that sort of research that Dr. McMillan has done. But it's very interesting research, and I think it sort of bears out what I guessed, you know, from being an observer all those years at the commission.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let us go now to Stuart, who is in West End. Hi there, Stuart.
Hello, how are you?
Fine. Welcome to the program.
Good. It's strange to be listening to the radio on the phone.
Okay. Well, we try to provide all those experiences here. So, did you have a question for our guests?
Just a comment.
Yeah.
Jefferson said that no nation is drunken where wine is cheap. And it seems that they're kind of confusing the argument here. They're talking about a high-end product with people who are purchasing, you know, from the low end. These people want more bang for their buck, but this is too much buck for the bang. They're trying to raise the limit for something that's going to be purchased by a specific group, and that's the more affluent set than the college crowd. I mean, people who want something different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you support this idea of raising the cap?
I do indeed.
Now, are you a fancier of these fancy beers yourself?
I have not tried them, but when I do drink, it's usually not Coors, Budweiser, and that sort of thing. I like Guinness. I'm fortunate that our regiment's chaplain is also a brewer, and we get good homemade beers.
Mm-hmm.
But even when it comes to buying scotch, I buy good scotch. You know, I'm not going to sit down with a bottle of scotch and drink the whole thing. I'm just going to have a little bit.
Mm-hmm. You said your regiment. Are you in the military?
No, I'm retired from the military, okay. But I'm in a reenactment group, the 84th Royal Holland Emigrants.
Oh, okay. 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 So you go back to the old stuff then, I take it.
The good stuff.
Do you make this yourself? Is it?
I don't brew anymore myself because, as I said, our chaplain is an excellent brewer.
Okay. Okay. Well, great. Well, is drinking part of every reenactment?
Well, we drink because it's historically accurate. No.
I've heard that a lot.
When we socialize in the evening, sometimes we'll sit down and have a beer or two. If we don't have to go home, then in the evenings, yes, we'll sit down and maybe have some mulled wine. Mm-hmm. It really depends on what everyone's into, but it's not... The people who are going to purchase this aren't into drinking to get drunk. It's the effect. It's like buying a bottle of good wine.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You don't buy an expensive wine to sit down and swill the bottle.
We are talking about North Carolina's alcohol laws and an effort in the legislature to raise the cap on the alcohol content in beer. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. If you want to join us, the number is 1-877-962-9862. And beyond that, we will be talking with a Triangle man who is fighting a fine he received for traveling to Cuba. All of that ahead on The State of Things. And support for The State of Things comes from listeners who support North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. We are talking this hour about liquor laws in North Carolina, the history, the effectiveness, and some efforts to change those laws. At the moment, there is a movement to raise the alcohol content of beer allowed in North Carolina. It has been 6% for a number of years, and there is a bill that has gotten through the State House that would raise the permissible alcohol level to 15%. With us is Julie Bradford, editor of All About Beer magazine and director of the Pop the Cap campaign. Also with us, Ann Fulton, former chair of the ABC Commission, and Brian McMillan, professor of pharmacology and toxicology at ECU. And we are taking your calls. The number is 1-877-962-9862. Larry is in Fayetteville. Hi there, Larry.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you. I guess I have an opinion rather than a question, and I understand what your guest is talking about, at least the lady that was talking about the new beers and stuff. But my thing is states that regulate liquor sales and have a commission, I really think that the state needs to get out of the liquor sales business and let it go to private folks, because I mean, they sell liquor and hire people to catch you drinking too, and you know, I just think it's a conflict of interest.
Okay, Larry, I'm going to put your question to Ann Fulton, because for a number of years she headed the ABC Commission. Ann, what about that? Why is the state in the business with the ABC stores of, for all outward appearances, being the place you go to buy your liquor in North Carolina?
Well, in the country, there are 18 jurisdictions that control the sale of spirituous liquor and or beer and or wine. And there are 17 states and one county. I don't see that it is a conflict of interest at all. Liquor is a very potent intoxicant, and I believe that the states are in the best position to regulate the sale and distribution of it. And it's the liquor is actually not purchased by the state of North Carolina. There is no investment by the taxpayers in a single drop of liquor. It is the state ABC Commission is charged with the responsibility of providing for the receipt, the storage, and the distribution of the liquor to the local ABC boards.
But is it, as I said, though, for outward appearances, you go to the state-run ABC store in your county to get your, you know, fifth of whatever liquor you want. I mean, the state's not selling this on consignment, is it?
The state does not purchase the liquor or sell the liquor. The liquor is actually purchased by the local ABC board. A local ABC board can be a municipal board or a county board. In Wake County, for example, in Cumberland County, we have a countywide board that is appointed by the county commissioners, and they determine where to set up the stores and what the hours of operation will be and what products to sell. The state provides for receiving it in a central warehouse in Raleigh and then trucking it to the 150 local ABC boards across the state.
I wonder, though, I think in people's minds, though, it may not be the state of North Carolina that owns it, but it's the government, it's some governmental agency, the ABC commissions, a group that is ordained by the government that is mm-hmm. that is in the business of doing that. But how much do the ABC stores bring in taxes, in revenue to the state? I mean, what do they make in the most recent year?
I'm not familiar with the actual dollar amounts. I know that in one of the last years I was serving at the commission, there were over $400 million in sales, total retail sales. Of that dollar amount, I believe close to $100 million went to the general fund because of the excise tax that is levied upon the sale of spirituous liquor. Mm. In addition to that $100 million, there was a substantial number of dollars that went to the local governments, to the city councils and county commissions for general revenue purposes.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds as though with the sales at $400 million approximately and the revenue coming in at about $100 million, that's about 25% is in something we might call a tax or...
Oh, right. Yes, liquor is probably the most highly taxed commodity there is. That's a consumer product, and the state makes a lot of money, as well as the local governments. Mm-hmm. And in order to collect that tax, we have a limited number of people who are making sales, so that it's a pretty assured collection. In other words, you're not selling, or you're not trying to make sure that 12,000 retailers are all remitting the taxes that are owed. You have just 150 local ABC boards that are responsible for remitting those taxes back to the state.
We have time for one more call. We'll go to Tom in Durham. Hi there, Tom.
Hi there.
Hi.
I just had a quick question. North Carolina is one of the few states left to have this kind of a 6% law, and I'm wondering if there are negative effects that other states have experienced. I think Georgia and Ohio recently raised their cap. I mean, is this a negative potentially for North Carolina?
Julie Bradford, you're a proponent of raising the cap.
Yeah. Yes, I am. We've watched the examples in Georgia and Ohio very carefully because Ohio maybe 3 years ago, Georgia less than 1 year ago popped their cap. What it's meant on the overall landscape of alcohol sales is, in fact, very little. Overall beer sales do not change that much because people don't seem to realize that it is so dominated by the mass marketed brands that this little blip from specialty beers doesn't make much of a difference. However, for small brewers, small retailers, specialty restaurants, specialty pubs who want to be in this niche of the business, it has been a wonderful opportunity. It allows those brewers to add new style to their repertoires, and it keeps people in the state supporting those small businesses. Mm-hmm. So it's been positive. I've spoken to the wholesale boards in both states, and they say it's been a small effect, but positive, and for a small number of people, very positive.
Mm-hmm. Well, Julie Bradford, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
And thanks to Brian McMillan and Ann Fulton. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Julie Bradford is director of the Pop the Cap campaign and editor of All About Beer magazine. Ann Fulton is former chair of the North Carolina ABC Commission. And Brian McMillan is a professor of pharmacology and toxicology at ECU.